Okay, guys, so for this episode, I decided to not edit the audio. Some of the audio at the beginning was really choppy, but basically it was just the introductions of me and Linnell trying to get not comfortable with each other, but to just do introductions. But you didn't really miss much. You just missed me messing up his name, and that was about it. So I'm happy that part got messed up. Good job, Anchor app.
Linnell, what's up, man? Can you hear me?
Can you hear me okay?
Good, good. I am pronouncing your name right.
It's Linnell.
Linnell. I was gonna ask.
It's good, man. I hear all types of things. So as long as you get close to it,
Yeah, that's how I feel most of the time too, especially with my last name. People always get it wrong, even though it's only five letters.
Yeah, what is it? Sturm?
Yep, you got it right.
Yeah. Good deal.
So why don't you start off by telling people who you are? I know who you are because I've looked you up, but
I'm Linnell Green with Happy With Daddy. Started this movement, this brand about 2 years ago. Actually on my oldest daughter's birthday. Just real passionate about fatherhood. And so wanted to really get behind it and help motivate fathers, push fathers to do more, to do better, to be involved in their kids' lives. We get a bad rap sometimes in society, and people tend to think that fathers are not capable of doing certain things. And I wanted to change that. I wanted to be a part of the change to show you that we are involved. We are we can do a lot of things. We are smart. We want to watch our kids grow. We want to be a part of their lives. And we want to watch them succeed, and we want to love them. So very, very passionate father, two beautiful girls, 7 and 5. And I love doing this, man. I absolutely love it. It's easy work for me to do this, and it comes natural to me. And so here I am 2 years later, and it's growing and growing and growing, and meeting guys like you, meeting fathers like you that are passionate just like me is awesome. It's been an awesome experience, and I'm looking forward to many, many years to come of doing similar collaborations and projects and such with individuals like yourself.
Yeah, they say it's best if you're doing something that you're passionate about, man, and having two daughters, like, that's definitely something I understand. I actually have four kids. I got three girls and a boy. I snuck one boy in there, but I was just lucky enough to do that because every guy in my family all have girls. I'm the only one that had a boy. So
nothing wrong with being a girl dad, man.
So I was looking over your blog, and I know you're going to interview me, but you had an article about Kobe and his daughter and their crash. And I just really wanted to talk to you about that because it was something that really touched me, or at least a segment of it did, when you were talking about how you were trying to explain to your kids essentially that, Kobe and his daughter had passed, and just the struggle you were having to even kind of try to get that out to them, to be able to explain it to them. And as a parent, I think we try to guard our kids so much against the things that happen in this world that sometimes it's almost like we have to take a step back and just realize that they're getting a little bit older and they're going to have to learn these things eventually. So we have to figure out the best way we can to try to explain hard situations to kids.
Yeah, it was a rough day. It was blindsided. Obviously with the tragedy that happened with Kobe Bryant and his daughter. And then the real blind side for me as a father came when my daughter started asking questions. So we, as you read in the blog, we were getting the car washed and just sitting there and listening to the radio, and breaking news comes across. And they didn't think anything of it at first, but then obviously after that, for the next 30, 45, I mean, for a while, but at least for the next 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, they literally, that's all they said on the radio, was talking about Kobe Bryant. So my daughter finally asked, why are they talking about Kobe Bryant? What's going on? And it was the first time that I've had to explain it to my daughters before, but it's been great grandparents. It's been people that have lived 70, 80 years. And so it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different to explain to them when somebody's lived 80 years on earth to say, well, great granddad had a good life. And they can relate to that because they see, his age. They can see the things that he can't do anymore over the years due to his age. So it kind of sits a little bit different than trying to explain this, phenomenal athlete, and why it's such a tragedy for not just the sports world, but for our world in general. And then explaining the daughter part, that was really, really, really tough. Explaining the age. And, my daughter was like, so they're never going to come back. And then I'm like, no. And so she's like, what about the mom? And what about the other kids? And I had to explain to her. I said, that they won't see them anymore. They have to, the mom has to do it on her own now, with the other children. And so she just kind of was puzzled. She didn't understand it. She still doesn't understand it. I mean, we go to the grocery store and he's all over the magazines as you go to the checkout aisle. And they still to this day, ask questions. And my little one's like, is Kobe, has he come back yet? And I'm like, no, he's not, he didn't come back. He's not coming back. So it's hard. It was very, very tough to explain. And then as a father with daughters, I mean, it was emotional, man. It was by far one of the most emotional moments of my life. And they still don't understand it fully, but at least I was able to get something out and be able to explain a little bit to them and not hide completely the fact that death does exist, no matter, age, race, religion. It can happen to you. So I'm glad I was at least able to talk to them a little bit about it, but the full meaning of it and the emotional part of it, they still don't understand.
Yeah, I was going to say for my kids, the only examples I really have had for them has been grandparents and our dog. We had a dog that passed away. But whenever it's a superstar like a celebrity, it just seems like it's so much more, especially one that's let's just say Kobe was just past his prime as an athlete because he had retired. It's still hard for somebody of that caliber when it's all over everywhere. They can see it everywhere. Like even if your kids are in a scenario like mine where my kids are, they go to a private Christian school and they don't get to see like a lot of the media and stuff. They still see it because I mean it's Kobe Bryant. How could they not see it? But I guess for me as a kid growing up in the 90s, the only person I could compare it to was like in the 90s when Pac died for the hip hop generation.
Yeah.
So, if you want to, man, we can go ahead and roll into these questions.
Yeah, definitely, man. And I want to say appreciate you checking out the blog. Means a lot. The response that I got off of writing that blog was very well received. A lot of text messages, a lot of messages on social media. So I do appreciate you bringing that up and sharing that with me. And sharing it with the audience. And
I was gonna say, not a problem. I enjoyed it, man. I enjoyed reading it, so.
okay. So let's dive into your story here. It stuck out to me when you posted it on social media on the men's group, and I read it. And for one, I commend you for even getting on a platform like that and posting it because it's hard. It's hard sometimes for men. It's hard for fathers to do that because that's just not something that we have done in the past. But I like to see that we're changing that. And I know I listened to your podcast. I listened to the first episode, and in that episode, you shared a very unique story with your audience about a tragic situation that happened when you were 18 years old. So, if you don't mind, if you kind of want to walk us through that story again and exactly what happened when you were 18.
So to give I guess we don't have to be short, but so essentially when I was 18, I was dating a girl who was from North Carolina. She had moved up here and was friends with one of my friends. She introduced us and we just started dating. We hit it off. We were dating for about 6 or 7 months, and you know, it was one of those young love things. And she ended up having a crazy ex-boyfriend from North Carolina. He literally found out that she had a new guy up here somehow. When I found out she moved up here to actually get away from him, and somebody like a third party person that didn't know that gave him her address. And he drove up here specifically from North Carolina just to kill me and her. So he showed up at the house one day. I believe it was like a Monday or a Tuesday. I can't remember. I know the exact date was April 7th because actually, we'll go to what happened later on in the story. But April 7th is actually my mom's birthday. That's why I can't forget the date. I wouldn't forget it anyway. But long story short is he shows up at the house. I knew he was a little crazy from some of the stuff she had told me, and he's a big dude. I'm 5'2", and even now, like I'm pretty athletic, but at being short at 5'2", I weigh 150 pounds. Her ex-boyfriend was 6'6" and probably weighed about 220. So he showed up at the house. I called my cousin. My cousin showed up. My cousin was a little crazy too back in the day, and you know, I told him essentially bring his weapon, or you know, back then we just said bring your heater. And he came over. He sat there the whole time he was there, and then they talked or whatever, and he left. And then later on that night at like 2 o'clock in the morning, he threw a cinder block through the rear window to the house and actually came in through the window. And when he came in, he started to fight with me. I grabbed him, fought with him, and I told the girl, Jeanette, which was the girl, I told her to get out of the house. Her and her friend, who both lived in the same house, they both left and got out. So I'm fighting with him. He gets me up to a point where he's got me against a wall, and I push off of him. He pushes back a couple feet, and he reaches down to his waist and he pulls out a gun and he shoots me in my left arm, and he goes to shoot me a second time. And all he see, I think all he sees because it's dark is the amount of blood that's coming. So he thinks that he shot me somewhere else and he leaves. When he leaves, I tie my arm off and I actually went into the bathroom, which was right next door to the room I was in, and I locked the door. I locked the door because I thought she had already got out. They had already left. And I actually ended up going out the back window of the house to try to run and get myself some help. I got about a block and a half away and I heard two more shots. And I actually was running towards a Kmart and someone stopped me at the Kmart door. This is how you know this is old, because there were still Kmarts. Someone stopped me at the Kmart door and essentially put me in the restroom and locked the door. And then they called their security team. And then the ambulance came and the police came. And I didn't find out until the next day after I had a surgery to repair some damage in my arm that she had actually died. Those two gunshot wounds were her getting shot after I got out of the house.
Wow, man. It's I'm sure, I mean, listening to you give the details of it, what is it, 18 years later?
Yeah, and still hard to talk about.
And it's you the way you're describing it 18 years later is as if it just happened a month ago. So with something like that happening to you at the age of 18, here we are 18 years later. What type of effects has that had on you that you've seen, that you've noticed?
I think in a lot of ways it's kind of been great. And then in some ways it's been bad, because it's been great in the sense that, like, it's really pushed me to kind of live in the moment, like every moment that I get. But it's also pushed me at times to not be, I guess, as good as a planner as my wife and my family needs me to be. So it's been a blessing and a curse. You know, you can't really say that something like that is a blessing, but, you know, it kind of makes you appreciate life in a way that I don't think anyone who hasn't gone through something like that really could.
Right. Right. Yeah, man, I couldn't imagine, man. And, you know, a lot of people walk this earth with unique stories. And it's crazy to hear them and see how they affect you. Because that's something obviously that you're never going to ever forget. And I'm sure certain things from that, like you explained, are things that you still do today, are still some of the things that you are the way you are today. And in that same podcast, your introductory podcast, you talk about your parents. So I definitely want to hear about that. You said they were both addicts. And what was that like, man? What was it like to grow up having two parents that were addicts, and what was that environment like?
Well, with my mom, it was always kind of unique. My mom always kind of was able to, like, find the balance. Like, she was messed up, but she was never as messed up as my pops was. Like, my mom could always keep it together around us, and she could always put on a front in front of us. And she worked so much. Like, my mom worked 70 hours a week, but on top of those 70 hours a week, she was popping Xanax like every single day just to be able to function on a normal level, because she had so much, I guess, anxiety. And I think looking at it growing up, you know, as being an adult now, I think a lot of that anxiety that she had was because of my dad being as bad as he was. You know, he wasn't just, I tried to explain this to somebody once. My dad wasn't just an addict in one manner. You know, like, usually if somebody's an addict, it's usually just cocaine or just heroin or just pills. My dad, it was everything. Like, it was lottery. It was heroin. It was pills. Like, anything you could name under the sun, my dad was doing. He was an alcoholic. Like, I don't even know, like, looking back at it, how my dad functioned, because if I did half the things that my dad does now, even now, my dad is, he's going to be 60 this year and he's still an addict. I don't understand, like, how he even has the capability to do as many things as he does. But as a kid growing up, it wasn't so much rough, like, because I was always seeing him. It was more like I would eat dinner or lunch or, you know, whatever meal. I would eat it wherever I could. Like, actually, last year I went back and I just went over and found people on Facebook that I grew up with. And I just started thanking them essentially for keeping me alive from like 14 to 18. Because for those 4 years, my mom was gone. Like, she was just never at home. And my dad, I don't know if you're familiar with Detroit, but my dad pretty much lived at a bar in Cass Corridor, which is, it's not the worst part of Detroit, but it's not a good part of Detroit either. And he would just always be down there with my uncle, and I'd go with him sometimes. I will credit my dad for one thing. I don't know if you saw the picture of my wife.
Yeah.
But my wife and I are an interracial couple.
Yep.
And I credit my dad for that, because he used to always take me into Detroit as a kid. And It's funny, but I used to say the older black ladies used to pinch my cheeks. But I think the hardest part was definitely just always looking for your next meal. And my dad was abusive, but like not as bad as a lot of people I knew in that age range. Like when I was growing up, I knew people whose parents like literally beat them like all the time. And my dad would just he'd eventually he'd fist fight us once in a while when he was drunk, me and my brother. And his idea of great parenting was coming home at 4 a.m. and throwing a bag of Taco Bell at us and saying, "Eat your dinner."
Oh wow. Wow, man. So yeah, I mean I again, man, it's this story, this story and what you've been through, man, and to see where you are now is it's awesome, man, and to see what you're trying to do to help out other men and other fathers. So when we fast forward to today, right? So you're a father of four, you got three girls, you got a boy. How are you right now as a father? How are you doing as a father to your four children?
I would say I'm good most of the time. I try to take my kids out and have them engaged in things that I like to do. It doesn't always work out. Like I love fishing and I wish that my kids were more engaged in it, but I got two of the four that really truly love to fish with me. And then the other two, they could give or take it, but I think that's my wife's DNA because she doesn't like the fish either. But I do that with them. I try to take them out and just take them to parks and let them have fun, run free. I try to take them outside as much as possible. And I try to just be present with them as much as I can be. I really do love being a dad. I love being able to how do I say this? As men, we like to be children again. So I have no issue playing with Legos. Or playing with G.I. Joes or any of that stuff with my son, or my daughters. Play-Doh for sure. I like to make things with Play-Doh. I think one of the best things we can do as parents is most of the time just to be present and making sure that we're doing things that engage with our kids that don't involve technology. I don't know how your kids are with technology, but mine, if you let them on it for more than like an hour, and then you try to take them off of it, it's like little temper tantrums just go out in fits. So I try to keep them off that as much as possible and just love on them, let them know every day, especially my daughters, that they're loved. I forget what it was, but there was some study I read that said just a dad just being present in his daughter's lives actually causes them to progress in their age more slowly, like they don't mature as quickly.
Yeah, to be present as a father, you know, who has daughters, I think it's just huge, man. I think there's so many studies out there that tells you not only for your kids in general, but the father-daughter relationship. I think there's a lot of studies out there that will show you the effects that that has on them for when they, how confident they feel about themselves, how they feel towards, you know, men and boys as they get older. How they are going to essentially love and receive love as well. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest ones is they're going to know what to allow in their life and what not just by the example that was set by their father. And so when you look at your past, so we got the story of your past, and then we talk about where you are today as a father of four with your kids. How much of that past do they know? Do you incorporate that some of that in your talks with your kids and in those moments? Is it do you kind of bring the past to them?
I do, especially with my older two. My oldest is 12 and my second one after that is 10. My 10-year-old is super inquisitive and I try to make it a habit never to lie to my kids. So if they ask me questions, I give them truthful and honest answers. I obviously have a huge scar on my left arm from where I got shot. So, when my 10-year-old asked me, she said, "Daddy, what is this scar from?" I told her the story in its entirety, and she shed a little tear and essentially asked me if I was okay. And I said, "Daddy's been good for a lot of years." And that same inquisitiveness, though, has sometimes gotten me not in trouble, but she asked me about scars, but she's also asked me questions like, "Dad, have you ever been to jail?" And then I've had to explain to her, "Yeah, Dad's been to jail." And she asked why. I told her why, which was essentially was I was getting caught up in the same thing my dad was, but not the addict side. I was selling drugs, and I got arrested for that. But luckily, I was smart enough that I got arrested once. I went to jail once, and I've never went back to jail since.
Good, man. It's great to hear how you're incorporating your past with your children and telling them the truth. Because I tell you what, man, it's hard. It's hard. I've been in situations where you get caught off guard sometimes. And they don't know, they don't know. They're just kids trying to, figure things out. So when they ask you questions, sometimes they catch you off guard and you got to kind of explain, some of the things, that you've done. So, but in the long run, I think it's better for your relationship with your children. So go ahead.
I was gonna say, yeah, kids, they got no filter. They will ask you anything, they'll say anything. They do not care. It's almost as if they care about how you feel, especially when they get into that like 10, age 10 range, but they still don't have a filter on the things that they ask you, which is it's good in a way. You don't want your kids to be scared. You want them to be able to ask you all the questions that they can think of. But sometimes you don't want to explain it if you have a rough day or something.
No, exactly. I think all parents can relate. But yeah, I mean, it's good. It helps for me. The way I kind of look at it for the most part is it helps me grow. Because the stuff that you don't think about, when you think about fatherhood all the time, you don't always think about the part, the tough questions. We think about the great stuff, the fun stuff, Play-Doh, Legos. We think about going outside, but we don't always think that we're going to get put on the spot randomly. With certain questions. So I think it's growth. And again, glad to see that you're sharing that experience with your children. I think it's going to help you guys out in the long run. And so you got this podcast, you started this podcast and you titled it Unequipped, which to be honest, I was like, wow, why didn't I think of that? I'm like, that's a good title. I'm like, I like that title. And explain to the audience, man, the meaning of that title. How'd you come up with it, and what does that title represent? Because I'll be honest with you, that one word, unequipped for men, for fathers, says a lot. I mean, it's going to say something different for everybody. I can tell you, I read it unequipped, and I immediately thought, of what I'm unequipped to do and what I didn't get in life to be equipped for fatherhood. And every father is going to be different. Every man's going to be different. So kind of tell us about the title and how you came up with it and everything.
I mean, you almost said it for me, but
Sorry.
essentially, I actually came up with the title. This was my original name for my podcast, believe it or not. And I kind of spitballed like a couple other ideas, and I even ran them across other people to like see, like friends that I trusted to see what they thought. And then at the end of it, I was just like, I like this too much because I really just want to make it a focus, not just to say, "Hey, I'm unequipped to deal with this," or whoever I interview in the future to say, "You're unequipped with to deal with this." But I think moving forward at the end of these things, I want to kind of create a process where I give people not just information, but I can point people to things like your blog if they say they're not equipped to be a father. Or, other people's blogs or other people's podcasts, if they're struggling to do things financially or to just have an understanding of life in general or people with mental illness. I want to be able to point them in a direction where they can get the tools that they need to be equipped. And also, when I was spitballing those other names, believe it or not, all the other names that I came up with, they were too close to the names of other podcasts, so I just couldn't do it.
So you actually searched to make sure that it wasn't something that was taken?
I did. I definitely looked around and like made sure that nobody took this podcast name, and I could have missed something, but
Yeah.
some of the other names I had were like one of them was I'm not okay and that's okay, and there's a podcast that's really close to that. It's something like I'm not okay. I think it's I'm not okay, that's okay. So it was literally like one word difference.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, because I'm a creative person, I got a degree in graphic design. I always kind of look at things before I decide to go ahead and roll with something to make sure it's not a lot of other things out there.
Yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from with that. With Happy with Daddy, I was the same way, man. I was put it out there. I Googled, I double checked, triple checked, looked, took me so many drawings to come up with my logo. I mean, I searched and searched and searched, man, for weeks. And I was like, I can't find anything close to it. And so I was like, all right, let's roll with that. And to kind of conclude, our interview here, and you kind of mentioned it, and it's kind of cool how you just mentioned it in the last answer. I kind of want you to leave us with some sort of advice or something that you want to let fathers know. I love the name Unequipped for your podcast, the story that you have, the unique story from tragedy to raising four beautiful children. And definitely want to give you this opportunity to just, what do you have to say for the fathers out there listening? There's something you want to leave us with.
So as men, I think we have a huge habit of getting ourselves caught up and not feeling like we're good enough. And a lot of times we'll take that feeling of not feeling like we're good enough, we're feeling like failures in our marriages, our relationships, and being a parent and a father, we have a tendency to take those things and then we dwell on them. And we keep them, and it's almost like we sit in a place where we allow the stress and the anguish and the guilt to actually hurt us more than it would if we were to just say, I know I failed. I know I messed up here. So what can I do to get better? I think we really got to do better as men to just talk to each other and to kind of have each other's backs. I think a lot of times we want to talk about base stuff, like stuff that's just on the surface, like sports, what we're doing, how our job's going, how we feel in our days. But we don't really want to get into the deep stuff of, like my marriage is failing. I don't know what I'm doing. But the best conversations I've had with other guys has been through those, I guess, admitting my failures and my weaknesses. And then getting advice from guys who have either gone through the same thing or they've already moved past it or they're currently even going through it. Because even though you don't think you can take advice sometimes from people who are going through the same situations as you, sometimes just hearing somebody else's perspective on the same situation will allow you to realize a different way to deal with it. But I think we just got to do better at making sure that we don't focus on the negative things and keep those, but instead we focus on making sure that we're taking steps every day to make ourselves better that day and then the next day. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and it's a struggle. It's definitely a struggle. But I think with your platform and what you're going to do with Unequipped, helps with Happy with Daddy and the many other platforms out there. I think it makes it easier. I mean, I don't think 15, 20 years, ago, 30 years ago, our fathers didn't have platforms like this to go look look to. They didn't have podcasts. They didn't have books about fatherhood and about being an emotional dad. We didn't have blogs. They didn't have websites. They didn't have any of this stuff. So I think in our generation and where we are, it's a great opportunity to open up a little bit more and let other fathers know, other men know that it's okay. It definitely is okay to open up. And yeah, man, it's been an awesome, awesome interview. Great story. Great story. And not great from a sense of obviously the tragedy, but great from a sense of seeing what your past looked like and where you could have gone. And where you are now is not the path that you could have easily taken another route. And I just want to say thank you, man, for allowing me to interview you. This is my first time interviewing anybody. So usually I'm on the other end. Usually I'm answering the questions. So this was great, man. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, Jeremy. And yeah, man, we'll have to do this again. And maybe we'll flip roles the next time I can answer some questions for you. But definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, we for sure could do that, man. And I definitely appreciate your time. And everybody who listens to this, go ahead and check out Happy with Daddy. It's a great blog spot. You guys will not waste your time. It is phenomenal. You will read it and you will instantaneously be slightly happier.
I appreciate that, man. And we'll definitely have to get together on some more unequipped episodes and definitely share with the fathers out there. So keep doing an awesome job and we'll be in touch, man.
Yep. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Thank you.